This is 69, the podcast. I'm Dave Haynes. 69 has been covering the digital signage industry since the dawn of man, first online and now as a podcast. The goal on here is to make listeners aware of interesting companies, smart people, and new technology developments, all of them meaningful in making digital signage projects happen. I try to help listeners understand sometimes complicated subjects and why they should care. The podcasts are free and I try to get a new one out weekly, but things happen now and then. The 69 podcast has been gratefully sponsored and supported since the start by Jeremy Gavin and the fine folks at ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. ScreenFeed makes beautiful looking, totally automated content for signage and digital out-of-home networks. Check them out at screenfeed.com. 69 has been around since 2006, and the publication and podcast are now owned by Spectrio, which provides customer engagement solutions for business. You can find them at spectrio.com. Experience is one of those soft, squishy terms that gets used a lot in the context of digital signage. Using displays and content to attract, engage, and leave a desired impression with the people who go through a design space. There are many projects that get described as visual experiences that aren't a lot more than screens on walls that are running stuff. But a Brooklyn company called Hush Studios is absolutely in the business of designing and delivering visual experiences that can communicate the mission, values, and products of big corporate clients. Hush has done interesting work in the corporate spaces of some of the biggest and most familiar brands in the United States and beyond. The company came on my radar after it pushed out a case study last year, showing what was done at Uber's newly opened corporate campus in San Francisco. It's a digitally driven space, but much more inventive than just a big fine pitch LED on a feature wall. I had an interesting chat with David Crumley, the Austin, Texas-based technology director for Hush. We get into the thinking and technology challenges of these kinds of projects, what works and why, and his life being the guy who has to make the big ideas into something that exists or can be made, that makes sense, fits a budget, and works reliably. David, thank you for joining me. What does Hey Hush do, and what's your role there?
Hush is an experiential design firm based in Brooklyn. Our mission is to design experiences for the most dynamic organizations in the world. Our work is around the globe. Our goal is to kind of seamlessly integrate architecture and digital technology to create custom experiences for, workplace, employees, guests, and kind of transform the built environment with technology. And my role is the technical director, and I focus on the kind of AV hardware and systems side of it. And we have other technical directors that focus more on the software side.
Okay. So you would go on site, do site surveys and all that, at least in normal times, and basically work with the big thinkers who say, we want to do this. And you say, okay, or sure, we can do that.
Yeah, that's actually a great way of describing it. And how I often will talk with my team is, we have an amazing creative team of art directors, architects, come up with amazing concepts that are, sketches or quick renders. And my job is to then look at that and figure out, okay, yeah, how do we make that? What technologies can we use? Hopefully it's something that exists already, so it's not building something from scratch. Sometimes it is. And then working with huge ecosystem of partners on the client side and the build side to bring it all to life.
Mm. So at least part of your time is spent understanding the emerging technologies and building relationships with different vendors to understand whether these guys will deliver or they're going to be a problem.
Exactly right. Yeah, I spend a lot of time working with LED manufacturers, lighting manufacturers, AV integrators, fabricators, physical computing partners, all over the place to figure out, to kind of know and have a jump start on what products or options are out there, what will make the most sense to be permanently installed, because our projects are have a lifespan a lot of times of 10 plus years. So it's crucial to have those relationships and that knowledge of all the hardware and technologies out there.
The company's key statement says how you mix content, space, and technology to communicate and organize an organization's mission, vision, and products. I'm curious how you get to that, because there's a lot of corporate mission statements out there that somehow manage to be lofty and, in their words, but also kind of empty. Like I look at their mission statement, I go, okay, what does that mean?
Yeah, that's a good question. And, you know, quite to be totally transparent, that is not my area of expertise, thankfully. We have a great team of strategists and creatives that spend a lot of time upfront working with the clients to distill that down to kind of figure out the essence of what we should be creating and what should be built and what the messaging should be to actually translate those, you know, the company's brand and mission and identity into these experiences that, you know, they can easily turn into something where it becomes more complex or convoluted. And I think Hush does a really great job of distilling that down and finding kind of the essence of what needs to be communicated and doing it in kind of like an artful and thoughtful way, which is one of the main reasons I've worked with them so long and enjoy the work we do there.
Mm-hmm. Do projects lead with digital, or is it more a case of it's just a common outcome because the technology makes sense?
It's a bit of both. I mean, we do start with digital, but, you know, because that is, you know, our bread and butter. We are excellent at taking data and content and, you know, using that to create, you know, amazing visualizations and, you know, content and lighting animations and whatnot with these projects. But we also do a lot of strictly analog work as well. So super graphics, like fabricated elements that go within the building itself. And, you know, we have a few that have no digital components at all. It's just strictly analog type work. So it really depends on the space, the client, the brief, but most of our projects do have, you know, digital aspects.
Mm-hmm. Do the clients or potential clients come with a brief in mind? Do they have an idea, we want to do a huge video wall in our lobby or whatever, or are they more saying, we want to communicate our mission, our brand, what do we do?
It's a bit of both, honestly. We prefer whenever it's the latter, you know, we have more of a blank page to work with, and we can do those extensive strategy design concepting phases and really figure out what makes sense for the client, their brand, and for the space. But on the other side, we do get a lot of projects where the building is built, they have spec'd hardware, they have this big system, but they have nothing to go on it. And so we come in to figure out what kind of content or what makes sense on it. So we do a bit of both of that as well.
I would imagine the latter is maybe not problematic because it's work and it can still be interesting and all that, but you're kind of confined to what you can do, right?
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Hmm. Your company's worked with a lot of very big global brands. Why do they come your way?
I think that's a good question. I think they are drawn to the work we do that I kind of mentioned earlier, where we will work, you know, work closely with them to distill down what the message and what the concept is. I think we do a great job of integrating media and content into the architecture to where, you know, it's not just screens on walls or, you know, big video wall, like you said. And for the clients that want to have that tight integration between architecture, technology, content, storytelling, I think that's where we stand out in our body of work. And luckily, that gravitates with a lot of clients. And when they come to us, that's what they want. And that's what we do well. And so we're typically set up for success in that regard.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you mentioned storytelling. I found with a lot of corporate lobby video walls and what do you want to call them, experiences or whatever, it's not so much storytelling. It's more, at least the early ones, have been more just about wow factor.
Yeah, and that's very true. Like big, bold, fast content, you know, just trying to do that initial kind of wow moment, like you said. And another approach we do is kind of like a slow burn where there is a wow moment in the scale and the architectural elements, but we're not showing all our cards or all the things that the technology can do. It's, you know, a bit restrained both in the content and the tech, and it allows the content to be a longer, you know, enjoyable thing, especially for employees that come into a lobby every day where, you know, they don't see everything it can do the first time, and it just becomes, you know, repetitive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's interesting when you say slow burn, because I often talk about how wow factor jobs tend to have a best before date or an expiry date where it just becomes this very expensive big piece of wallpaper.
Yeah.
So yeah, the strategy is super important on that. Let's talk about a project that got hush on my radar, at least the global headquarters for Uber in San Francisco. Can you describe what was done there?
Yeah, so we were brought on very early. So it was one of those ideal situations that I mentioned of, you know, being kind of a blank slate where the client knew they wanted to do something in their lobby for a new headquarters building built in San Francisco. It's a multi-building complex, and there's one building called MB2 that is the main entry point.
Mission Bay.
Yep, exactly right. And it's, you know, amazingly designed building, and it has this beautiful open lobby space, and they knew they wanted to have, you know, some sort of interactive installation there. And we were brought in to do strategy and figure out what made sense. We did a bunch of concepts, but then there was narrowed down to two that we luckily had the time, budget, you know, process to actually build out and flesh out both of those concepts with full renders, motion tests, some initial drawings to really flesh them out and all the different content modes, presented our way up through the organization and got buy off on one of those concepts, which is called the Stream. And that was what was built. And the concept behind that at a super high level was just translating Uber's activities into beams of light and motion that would be constantly flowing through the lobby and resolving in a kind of high resolution canvas at one end of the lobby that could be used as a means of providing storytelling and, you know, more not traditional content, but it would at least be have the resolution and surface area to provide, you know, video content and a mix of motion graphics and whatnot. So we worked on that project for, I think the design was about 3 years, design, construction, fabrication. So it was a long-term project. And we installed it last year, and it officially launched this year. And it's actually being, components of it are being scaled to other Uber lobbies throughout the world that we are in the process of doing now.
So there's I believe at one end, there's a fine pitch LED video wall, kind of a, if you want to call it a conventional video wall that you might find in a lobby, but a lot of what was done was kind of like custom fabricated LED, almost like light tubes and things, right?
Yeah. You're exactly right on the LED wall. It's a Unilumen 1.2 millimeter pitch LED wall that is fairly standard. It's about 8 feet wide, about 9 feet tall. But the above it and throughout the lobby are these custom tubes. We worked with a fabricator called Machine Histories down in Los Angeles. And again, kind of going back to the privilege and opportunity to have a long design process and the time to prototype, we worked with them to create two prototypes of these LED tubes. And they are utilizing the Martin VC strip, which Hush has used on quite a few projects. And I'm a huge fan of it because it has long cable runs for the power supplies and 16-bit color depth, 60 frames per second, you know, refresh the content. I knew I wanted to use that to begin with, but we had a challenge in that we needed to have the tubes as thin as possible. Everything in our architecture team wants to do, of course, is as thin and, you know, sleek as possible. But we also needed to have the content viewable as close to 360 degrees around the tube. So we spent a lot of time figuring out the right diffusion, the right placement of the LED, figuring out cable management, kind of actually almost productizing the tubes, where we worked with the fabricator to make a custom PCB connector from tube to tube. So all the tubes can be easily removed and replaced for maintenance. But in the end, yeah, we ended up having over 2,200 of the Martin 15 millimeter strips used in these tubes. And there's an overhead component that's suspended from the ceiling that makes this tube array above your head as you walk in through the lobby. And that's, I think, just under 90 feet long. And at its highest point, it goes up to 25 feet. And it's the lobby has a single height area, and then it opens up into a double or triple height space. And the tube array actually bends up and goes up to the upper area over some suspended bridges. Mm-hmm. And then we also built a large wall behind the reception area using the same tubes that forms about a 22 foot high screen by 28 feet wide, low res with the same tubes, but it makes this huge statement that has a bit of transparency to see the stairs behind it through in between the tubes. And you can actually get behind the tubes and see the same content from mm-hmm. both sides.
I don't know the budget or anything else, but I kind of assume that if Uber really wanted to have high res tubes or just make the whole thing high res, they would have the dollars to do that, but they've gone this way. Why was it done that way? They kind of like the idea of keeping it low res and more visually interesting that way.
Yeah, there are a few criteria. One, kind of the visual aspect, and the architecture of the lobby has lots of slats and repeating linear elements. Mm. So the tube arrays complement that really well. And to your point, the LEDs are premium LEDs from Martin. The tubes are custom fabricated. There's a lot of work. So there's certainly that money could have been put toward more traditional LED displays or high res. But it was having that kind of artful, more integrated into the architectural design, as well mm-hmm. as something that just looks different and unique to the space. And we also had another criteria to keep in mind is that this lobby is an unconditioned space, and they could not add any additional cooling. So we were trying to keep heat and energy consumption to a minimum within the space, which the LED strips are great for that.
So it's an interesting kind of overall discipline that Hush has, in that there are creative shops who, you know, produce the material for big LED video walls and corporate lobbies and so on. And there are vendors like a Unilumin or Layard or name 100 others who could come into that space and say, yeah, we can put a 1.2 pixel pitch wall right along the whole breadth of the lobby here and there. But in order to really pull this together, you've got to have creative, you've got to have technology sourcing, and you've got to have a whole bunch of engineers in the middle to kind of pull all this together, right?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I mean, that's one of the great things about Hush is that we have architects on staff. We have, you know, more traditional kind of art directors and designers, motion graphics designers. Myself has the hardware background, creative technologists that do, you know, custom software dev. So this running this actual experience mm-hmm. is a custom piece of software that our team built in Open Frameworks. And it's actually multiple applications written, but that does a mix of rendered motion graphics as well as real-time content that uses a whole interactive system that I haven't even touched on. So I feel like to do what we do, you have to have all these different kind of departments and disciplines under one roof.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, if you don't have that, can you really even be competitive on these kinds of jobs?
Yeah, it's difficult because, if we didn't have this mix, we could potentially do the initial concept, and then that would then have to be bid out to another firm to build, and then potentially another firm to do the software. Yeah, it becomes, and also costly. You know, I would imagine that cost would then be probably double what it was.
Yeah, and finger pointing.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, one throat to choke is always mm-hmm. a good and bad thing, but depending on where whose throat it is.
You reference content. I'm curious, when you talk about being able to kind of visualize Uber's activities, what's going on there? Are you tapping into like an API that's kind of like analytics that are showing how many drivers are on the road right now or whatever?
We sourced data. Well, there's no live data feeding it, which we do a mix of content for our project. Sometimes mm-hmm. it's a live API. Sometimes it's an existing data set. And with this, we use existing info to build our content around. We do have some things, you know, future content modes we're working on that'll pull more live data. But the real-time component of this, the interactive mode that I mentioned, is using an array of 9 RealSense D435 depth cameras that are in that overhead array. And as guests walk under that array, you are kind of disrupting the stream of information flowing above you in the tubes. So you can see ripples within the content.
Okay.
Yeah. And then as you approach the high-res screen at the end of the lobby, once you reach a certain threshold, it reveals kind of like curtain animation that reveals more like traditional video content on the high-res wall. So you can actually trigger that content.
Hi, I'm Jeremy Gavin, CEO of ScreenFeed. Now, I'm not put off by the fact that you're not listening to this podcast to hear me. Just like audiences to any digital signage, you give your attention to content you find interesting or helpful. That's where my company ScreenFeed comes in. Our sole mission is to make your digital signage network more valuable by making content that is more valuable to your audience. If you'd like to drive more attention to your screens, visit ScreenFeed.com to explore the 75-plus content options we've created to do just that. And then give us a call. Now, back to the podcast.
I recognize that you're on the technical side of this, but I have to ask this anyways. Experience is a really, really soft, squishy kind of term. How does it get defined with these kinds of projects, and how do you measure and know when, you know, something is working, that it is delivering an experience?
Oh, that is a great question. I'll have to take a beat to think about that. yeah, because it is. Yeah, I'm very much on the technical side and not on the more feely side of it, I guess, for lack of a better term. But I think I personally, you know, kind of get, I'll look into, you know, social media posts or seeing what people's reactions to the work we do and, you know, how photos are being shared and how they're connecting to it. We, as a company, we do analytics in terms of, you know, number of guests there, their engagement time, how long they, what videos they trigger, you know, dwell time, all those things, which we turn into actual, you know, analytics reports for our clients to determine that. But I think it's more the kind of personal anecdotes that I find appealing, of just how they talk about this amazing experience they haven't seen before, or even this particular experience is viewable through the storefront windows. And this building is across the street from the arena where the Golden State Warriors play. So it gets a lot of pedestrian traffic. So you see a lot of photos of it, or people talking about it.
I've been right there.
Yeah. Yeah.
I've probably seen the building. Oh, but I don't know where it is, but doesn't matter. With the pandemic, we've had this shift of head offices being kind of the mecca, so to speak, and that's where you go, to many companies having people working from home. And I'm curious if that has changed the business, changed the way you have to approach corporate spaces, or and are companies scaling back, or are they seeing this stuff as even more important?
I think it's the latter. You know, we, of course, were worried at first a couple of years ago when everything happened. But then as we talked with clients and saw, you know, briefs coming out and seeing, you know, articles and blog posts from industry thought leaders, we've kind of come to realize, and also we agree with the stance that things like what we do in Uber's lobby and other headquarters, I think, help make the office a more appealing place to visit, you know, because it's and to actually get employees there, at least to, especially with content that is refreshed or ever changing or that's data driven, because it's something special to see and interact with. And so luckily, you know, since the pandemic started, the work we've been doing hasn't slowed down. And we're still seeing briefs and clients wanting to do these types of engaging experiences in their offices, public space.
You mentioned content being refreshed. Is that something that you have to really push on clients to understand that, guys, lighting this up is a great first step, but it's a first step you need to budget and think about what's on this display and what's in this experience, for, as you said earlier, 5 to 10 years.
Yeah, no, it's extremely important. And I think anything we do, we will do a content matrix and we'll propose evergreen content that can live throughout the life of the experience. And then as also content that needs to be refreshed or changed, or in the case of it being data driven or built off a data set, the frequency of that. So there's, kind of incentive to keep it fresh, like you said. And for a lot of our projects, after we deploy it, we'll build in, a certain amount of time for content updates over the next year, 2 years. That's part of the scope, so we can help make sure that happens, because it is easy a lot of times for it to be up, everyone's happy, and then kind of forget about it. And even though we build our own content management system and, adjust it to each project, and even though it's user-friendly to use and built to update, it's not always used by every client, obviously. So it's extremely important to do that and continue to update the content, like you said.
What do you do in cases where you have a corporate client or potential client who already has a corporate digital signage network, standard flat panel screens in like the sales area and maybe other areas as well, and they're using... they already have a CMS of some kind that they use, and they have a certain way of doing things, and you're trying to plug into that. Does it become problematic?
It's tricky, I'm not going to lie. And it's, we always get the request being like, well, why can't you just use the CMS we have? And it's possible. It's not easy and required. By the time you factor in all the customization that's required, it's typically more expensive than just using, the custom CMS that we built, and then editing it or adding features or modules to do everything it's needed. So we almost always will use our core CMS. And in the scenario that you said, that's come up recently, and we're actually we're building a feature to as you are using our CMS to create content that's real time and targeting our custom displays, it will actually render out that content in a video format, and so the company can use their existing digital signage system to use that video as well, so the content can be shared across.
So you would have a kind of a reverse API, so you could push stuff out to other kinds of systems.
Yeah, exactly right.
Is there technology like, let's say, super fine micro LEDs or the LEDs you're starting to see embedded in architectural glass that you're waiting on to kind of mature and then use?
Yeah, I feel like over the last 2-3 years, so many projects or clients or partners have recommended doing LED glass or the LED film that can be applied on glass, and it's getting close. We haven't used it yet because it just hasn't been the right resolution or the right brightness or for a myriad of reasons. But I'm certainly excited by it, but I'm not quite there yet to being able to spec it. And even the OLED displays, we haven't really spec'd those yet for the same reason, for content burn-in and just how they work. But I think this year I'm starting to feel more comfortable with those, and we're starting to include those in some of our design and proposals. And then the micro LED I am extremely interested in. We had a project last year that tried to use it, which didn't go super well because it was the product just didn't live up to expectations. But I think we'll, again, in another year, I think we'll be close if they can get the kind of coding process down to be consistent across it. But I have not seen that be totally successful yet.
You're using a lot of LED. Do you have to worry about proximity to people, or are you kind of encouraged by the increasing number of manufacturers who are doing these kind of coded modules?
I am interested in the coding. That's kind of what I was referring to about it not being kind of consistent across the modules or panels yet, where we had a project where it had the coding, but then it almost looked like you painted a brick wall with different shades of paint.
A little tiny bit patchy, yeah.
Yeah. But we tend to, we try and build, since we tie it so tightly into the architecture, we try and, incorporate ways to naturally keep people away. So like for Uber, for example, we have a nice trim piece around, and then the interactive spot for you to deal with it is, you know, 10 feet away, and there's it's kind of a natural stopping point. And so it's just using kind of the human nature of not getting too close to a big bright wall to help protect it.
Do all the business systems that now seem to be a lot more open, secure, but open through APIs, are you able to get out a lot more data?
Yes and no. It's still a little tricky in most regards to get truly live data from a lot of companies for exactly what you said, for security, privacy reasons. And then just making sure that data format or the API doesn't change drastically. That's been a big challenge for us. Mm-hmm. So we typically will, you know, we'll use live data, but it'll be in a way that can be formatted or, you know, have an intermediary step to then make sure it continues to work with our software application.
Through these last 2 years, I would imagine the standard practice when you're working on a project like the Uber one that started well before the pandemic, you would go on site, you'd be in San Francisco for 2 weeks or whatever, kind of figuring all this out. Have various Hush people had to mostly do this remotely?
It was a mix. We started the design process before, and then we did a few site visits before everything shut down. And then we luckily did the prototype review the year before. I guess it was 2019 that we did a lot of the prototype reviews, both in LA and our studio in New York with the client. And then during construction, we were not on site until it was essentially installed or close to being installed. And we had a very small team that went during a tube and hardware installation. So myself included, I was on site for a couple of weeks, but it was still a very small team and limited. And we had to do multiple trips spread out over a long period of time. But it was close to normal, but it was still very hard and tricky, and you never knew who was actually going to be able to be on site because of COVID protocol and, you know, which team you're going to be working with.
Yeah. Last question, if you can even answer this, is what is Hush working on that you're allowed to talk about?
Oh, that's a good question. Let's see. Well, I mentioned we're scaling the streamed experience that we did for Uber's headquarters to multiple locations, and that's wrapping up now for the main locations. And that is it doesn't have the tubes. It has various just direct view LED walls. But what's nice about that is they're each a little different because they're all tied into, you know, the architecture of the space. So one is fairly traditional single flat wall, but another one has a mitered 90 degree corner and is very, very long canvas. I think the resolution's a little less than like 7,000 by 900 pixels, so very like ultra wide format. And then another one has a radius corner around the wall because that's how the architecture was. And what's nice on our end is that we developed the software to smartly scale the content across all these different aspect ratios. And so that's deploying now. We have a few projects for some financial institutions that are launching now. That one of those uses LED strips, this time from SNA, along with a direct view LED wall that are incorporated into these kind of fins that does this kind of reflected light back on the wall behind it, which is really nice, which we'll hopefully be able to talk about more in another month or two. And then, we have some other things kind of early in the concept phase, but probably not allowed to talk about any of that.
Yeah, I would imagine when you talk about account wins and all that, it's in certain respects a much bigger win when you also in the contract are allowed to talk about the job when it's done.
Exactly. And that's, you know, going back to the Uber project, it's nice that it's ground level, public, accessible. You know, so many of our projects are on the top floor that you have to get through security or be invited to see. So it's, we love the ones that are, you know, a little more public facing.
Yeah, me too. There's been a few times when like the LAX airport with the international terminal, although Moment Factory did there, I wanted to see that, but I had to go know, post security on a flight to Japan or something if I wanted to see it. So never have.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I've been to LAX so many times, but I've not been in the Bradley terminal to see it. And one time I tried to get to it and had a long layover and tried to connect from my terminal to it. And it was exercise and futility. I could never get there.
Yeah. Huh. All right, David, thank you so much for spending some time with me.
Yeah, it's my pleasure.
That's it for this week's episode. I hope you enjoyed it and maybe you learned a thing or two. If you're new to 69, it's a podcast that's been around since 2016. You can click around the archive and find hundreds of conversations with smart industry people. If you're new to digital signage, you need to be reading 69 at 16-9.net. You'll find more than 8,000 posts by me and expert guest writers about this industry. 16-9 is not a press release republishing mill like a lot of the stuff out there. If something makes it on 16-9, that means it matters in some way to the business. Everything about 16-9 is free. Great sponsors make my work possible, and the key one here is ScreenFeed, the digital signage content store. Check out all the curated and automated content available at ScreenFeed.com. 16-9, the blog, and the podcast are now owned by Spectrio, which does customer engagement solutions, most of that digital signage, for all kinds of businesses. You'll find them in the Tampa area and online at Spectrio. That's Spectrio.com. You'll find me working out of a sunny back room in my house located outside Halifax, Nova Scotia, on the east coast of Canada. Thanks for listening. I'm Dave Haynes.